The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Aniko Gal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Glamour Magazine and 17 Magazine. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome back. We are going to finish up the November issue of Glamour Magazine with a couple of really excellent articles. And we're going to start right off by reading one called Talk, The World is Watching. Ambassador Nikki Haley has a lot on her hands. North Korea, Syria, Russia, and the most controversial U.S. president in modern history. Much to discuss, by Ashley Parker. Nikki Haley's office at the United Nations in New York City is decorated with world maps, family photos, and a slab of wood bearing her personal motto, "Can't is not an option." Sitting on a yellow sofa, Haley, 45, is the picture of calm, seemingly unaffected by the chaos that engulfs her controversial boss, President Donald J. Trump, almost daily. Ah, to be an American diplomat in the age of Trump, or, more specifically, to be Nikki Haley, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. At a time, when many around the world are denouncing President Trump, Ambassador Haley has the challenging job of representing the U.S. and, at times, translating the president's policies and tweets on the global stage, not to mention helping to solve what feels like a constant deluge of international crises. North Korea, anyone? Haley, a charismatic Indian American and rising star Republican, was not an obvious choice to join Trump's administration at the outset. As governor of South Carolina, she had endorsed his rivals in the primaries and remained critical during the 2016 election. Trump once tweeted, "The people of South Carolina are embarrassed by Nikki Haley," to which she fired back, "Bless your heart," with understated Southern steel. Even now, the two can, at times, seem out of sync. Haley led the charge in 2015 to remove the Confederate flag from South Carolina's statehouse grounds after the racially motivated shooting at Charleston's Old Black Church, Emmanuel AME. While 7 months into his administration, President Trump failed to immediately condemn white supremacist-fueled violence at a rally in support of Confederate monuments in Charlottesville, Virginia. But so far, Haley has found a way to make the job her own. Approved by the Senate for the UN position, with broad bipartisan support, she's the only woman on the 15-member UN Security Council, and she has managed to elevate both herself and the United Nations by speaking with freedom and force on a range of issues, from condemning Russia for defending Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, to declaring that North Korea is, quote, begging for war. Her performance has prompted whispers that she may be next in line for Secretary of State. Over the course of two interviews in August, I got to know the arguably most powerful woman in Trump's cabinet, as we covered everything from her upbringing in the only Indian family in Bamberg, South Carolina, to the reasons she took her current job. Here are the highlights. Glamour. I know you're a practicing Methodist now, but what was it like growing up Sikh in South Carolina? Nikki Haley. We were the only Indian family in our small southern town. My father wore a turban. My mother wore a sari. The people of Bamberg didn't know who we were, what we were, or why we were there, but learned to love us. My mom always said, "It's not your job to talk about how you're different. It's your job to talk about how you're similar." I think those lessons have carried me through life. You always have to come from the element of, what do you have in common? First, It makes it easier to work through your differences. Glamour. And you kept the books in your mother's clothing store? Nikki Haley. I started doing them at 13. My parents didn't want us on the street or in trouble, so they thought the best thing was to have us work. I saw how we had to, during bad times, stretch the dollar. And during good times, we couldn't spend it because you never knew when the bad times were going to happen again. It gave me a great respect for how hard it is to make money. Glamour. What prompted you to enter politics at age 32 when you ran for a seat in South Carolina's House of Representatives? Nikki Haley. I was never that kid that wanted to be in politics. What happened was I graduated with a degree in accounting. I came back home to the family business. I saw how hard it was to make a dollar and how easy it was for the government to take it. And my mom said, quit complaining about it. Do something about it. Glamour. Jumping ahead, when President Trump tapped you to be UN ambassador, you were a beloved South Carolina governor, with approval numbers often over 50%. You presided over a period of economic growth. You were often floated as a vice presidential pick, even ending up on Mitt Romney's shortlist. Why on earth did you want to leave all of that to take this job? Nikki Haley. I didn't, initially. When this was brought to mind, I didn't even know that much about the UN. I certainly had loved being governor of a state I wanted to serve. But when you're offered a job to serve your country, you step back and assess. And once I spoke with President Trump and told him what I thought I needed to be successful, which was to be a cabinet member, to be on the National Security Council, where I could be a part of the policy decisions, and to be able to say what I wanted to say, how do you not do that job? How do you not do that job? He was incredibly supportive. He's continued to be. I love a good challenge, and this certainly has been that. Glamour. Some women were disappointed to see a young female politician decide to serve a president who boasted about groping women. Why did you choose to take the job in spite of that? Nikki Haley. I love this country. And when you are given an opportunity to help your country in what is one of the most volatile times we've seen in a long time, there's no way I'm going to step up to do everything I can and make us strong. Glamour. Despite your political experience in South Carolina, you were considered a novice in international affairs when you were confirmed for this role. Has it been baptism by fire? Nikki Haley. The foreign policy was a learning curve, but the negotiation tactics, ability to communicate, strategizing the end goal, those skills are the same. Learning the foreign policy is the new part. That map is up there, as she gestures toward the wall, because I'm like, where is that little island? I don't know that I'll stop learning, but that's what I love. Glamour. Let's get into policy. After the chemical weapons attack in Syria in April, you were the first senior administration official to warn that the U.S. could take unilateral action against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. You went before the UN Security Council to criticize Russia, holding up photos of dead Syrians and asking, how many more children have to die before Russia cares? Russia helped block a measure supported by the U.S. that would have held Syria accountable for deploying chemical weapons. How do we force Russia to change its behavior? Nikki Haley. I needed Russia and my other colleagues to look at those kids. I need them to see images that were haunting me, and I needed them to haunt them. And I needed to let them know that we weren't going to let this go. I think for the first time we saw China separate from Russia on the Security Council, and Russia was left on an island in defending Assad and defending the Syrian regime. We have to make sure that they see These aren't just casualties. This is somebody's mom. This is somebody's daughter. Glamour, you have been very tough on Russia. You've called out Russia, as we discussed, on Syria. You've also said, everybody knows that Russia meddled in our elections. You've pressed for maintaining the sanctions because of Russia's incursion into Crimea. Why do you believe Russia is such a geopolitical threat? Nikki Haley, I think Russia has a decision to make. Right now, they think they can lead by causing chaos. The United States is not going to put up with that. What I have done is voice that in a strong way. We don't agree in how they support Assad. We don't agree with the fact that they meddled in our elections. We can't ever allow any country to think those things are okay. Glamour. The president himself, however, has repeatedly refused to definitively accept the conclusion of his own intelligence agencies that Russia meddled in our elections. Do you ever wish the president would listen to you a bit more on Russia? Nikki Haley. I don't feel like he doesn't listen to me on Russia. The reason is he's never called me and asked me to stop. He's never discouraged me from saying anything like I'm saying. He is being aggressive against Russia in the decisions he's making on oil dependence and sanctions with Ukraine. If he had a problem with what I'm saying, he would say something, and he hasn't. Glamour, in May, you went on your first international trip. You visited Syrian refugee camps in Jordan and Turkey. You were the highest-ranking U.S. official to come that close to the Syrian border in years. Why did you choose this as your first trip, and what did you see on the ground? Nikki Haley, migration is a serious issue that I don't think is talked about enough. 1 million Syrians have fled to Jordan. 3 million have fled to Turkey. I wanted to make sure that those refugees were getting what they needed. And so the only way I could do that was to go to see it for myself. What was fascinating was talking to these refugees. The overwhelming sentiment, regardless of what country or whether they were in a camp or not, is they just want to go home. Even though they know there's not much to go home to, they're ready to rebuild. Glamour. How can the U.S. help innocent Syrians, especially women and children? This administration introduced the travel ban, which indefinitely bans Syrian refugees from the U.S., and has proposed cuts to foreign aid and refugees overseas. How do you square those differences? Nikki Haley. We help them by going, by talking to them and seeing what they need. This administration does care about the Syrian refugees. That's why I went. Not one of the refugees said, I want to go to the United States. They all said they wanted to go home. So if that's the case, we have to help them. Glamour. In August, you and the UN Security Council passed sanctions against North Korea. Those sanctions included restricting North Korea's international trade in an effort to discourage its nuclear weapons program. Experts estimate the sanctions could cost North Korea $1 billion a year. That was a victory. What will show us that those sanctions are working? Nikki Haley, I think that the goal with those sanctions was to let North Korea know that the international community is not going to put up with their reckless behavior anymore. Those sanctions were certainly the strongest of anything that's been put on North Korea. So I think that it was definitely a heavy blow and a sign that they need to start paying attention and start finding ways to be more responsible. Glamour. In addition to saying that all options are on the table, the president also promised fire and fury in response to further threats against the U.S. by North Korea. What does that mean? Nikki Haley, don't test us, was what he was saying, because we will use everything imaginable to destroy the regime if they do that. We don't want any military operations. That's last on the list always. If they provoke us, we will respond, and that's what we are trying to let them know. Don't go down that road because you won't win. Glamour. The attack in Charlottesville also happened in August. As a woman of color and a moral leader, do you agree with President Trump when he said that there are many sides to blame for the white supremacist fueled violence? Nikki Haley, I think I made my views on that clear, whether it's what I've said in the interviews or what I said to the president in person. Haley told CNN she had a personal conversation with the president about Charlottesville, and that she believes we need to isolate haters and make sure that they know there is no place for them. So I think I need to just leave it at that. Glamour, okay. But as governor of South Carolina, you were instrumental in bringing down the Confederate flag from State House grounds at the time you didn't press to move Confederate monuments. In the wake of Charlottesville, do you still think no monuments should come down? Nikki Haley, I think those need to be community and state decisions, because I think it's going to be closest to the people. South Carolina is covered with universities, monuments, street signs. There's no end to things that refer to history, positive or negative. Rather than going the route of what would divide people, we added to history. So we started working on an African American museum being built now in Charleston and on a monument to honor the Emmanuel Nine who lost their lives. Glamour. Does the president care about the daily actions of diplomacy? I know a number of diplomatic openings at the State Department still aren't filled. Nikki Haley, I feel it because of how engaged he is. I think he puts a lot of weight on diplomacy. He respects what I do, what Secretary of State Rex Tillerson does, what his generals do. He asks for our opinions, and he changes based on the information that we give, and makes decisions based on everything. Glamour, is there an example where you've presented some information and seen him change his mind on an issue? Nikki Haley, yes, it has happened, but it would be irresponsible for me to tell what those issues are. But yes, that has happened. Glamour, you are now being mentioned as a possible Secretary of State if and when Secretary Tillerson leaves. Is that intriguing? Surreal? Nikki Haley, I don't take it seriously. Secretary Tillerson is not going anywhere. I can vouch for that. He is where he is. He continues to be strong in how he handles foreign policy, and I continue to work well with him. Glamour, you're the only woman on a 15-member UN Security Council. What's that like? Nikki Haley, I don't think about it. All of the men have been very respectful of me. And that's what I want. They don't have to like you. But as long as they respect you, that's really important. When I speak, I'm listened to. And when I try to move the ball, I do. Glamour, you're also one of the just 39 female ambassadors to the UN out of 193. How do you try to support those other female diplomats? Nikki Haley, while it's a small group, it's a powerful group. I'm going to be hosting an event in the residence. We're going to have a girl power group. When we talk about our own experiences or challenges at the United Nations, we can really work well together. You see men do that all the time. Glamour, what advice do you have for women who are interested in careers in government or world affairs? Nikki Haley, two things. Do things that are uncomfortable to do. I say that because women tend to step back from things that they don't know about. And the second, most important one, is push through the fear. Glamour, and you're not even a year into this job yet. Nikki Haley laughs. 6 months. Feels like 6 years, though. Glamour, where do you hope you'll be at the end of this ambassadorship? Nikki Haley, my parents always reminded me, my brothers and my sister, how blessed we were to live here. So serving our country is probably the coolest thing I could have ever done. I'm going to do this job. I'm going to do it well. When it's time to move on, I'll move on. I am comfortable walking away. Glamour, And finally, where do you hope women here and abroad will be at the end of President Trump's first term? Nikki Haley, I hope that women continue to find the power of their voice, because I do think if women ran the world, we would have true peace and security. Well, that was a long one, but boy, I'll tell you, what a role model. All right, now we're going to go on to some outfits for days. We thought we were sick of French girl style. Mais non. Jean Damas, or Dama, founder of French brand Rouge, is just so clever. J'adore. All right, on Monday, my winter uniform is jeans, boots, a sweater, and an oversized blazer for good measure. It's my formula for getting dressed in under 10 minutes. On Tuesday, a trick for looking taller is to wear a top and pants in the same color family and to hide heels underneath the pants. Wednesday, white jeans like these ones from my line Rouge are very summertime, but I like to take them through the fall with earth tone tops and accessories. Thursday, I love pairing bright details with simple looks as casual or casual materials like denim or cotton. Here, the reddish colors of my shoes and belt stand out against my white blouse and blue jeans. Perfection. Friday, the Parisian way to be chic is to look super sharp for everyday things and then do effortless casual for night occasions. A sweater over this gown turns it into a skirt for a trip to the market. Saturday, for dinners or dates, dark ground floral dresses are a go-to. My advice is to wear wrap dresses because they create a waist or add a belt. And finally, Sunday, the one thing I suggest you have in your closet this winter, a striped sweater. French women are known for wearing Breton stripes, but I like to experiment with different colors. Here, the brightness makes the skirt more exciting, and she's wearing a brown, kind of a leathery, almost plasticky looking skirt with horizontal navy, mustard, plum, and cream, and light blue and orange stripes, striped knitted shirt. And now we have a story from Beauty, The World According to Huda. She has over 21 million Instagram followers, a cult makeup line, and something to say. Huda Katan tells us how it all happened. I grew up in Tennessee, where no one was really hairy, and with sisters who were so beautiful. My little sister was a pageant girl, but me, I was this weird-looking hairy child. I had more than just a unibrow. I feel like I had a mustache, a goatee. I think that's what first led me to beauty and this idea of wanting to find ways to feel better about myself. By the time I was 9, I was already super into it, especially do-it-yourselves, inspired by my mom, who has always believed that remedies from the earth can be more powerful than beauty products. The first one I ever did, a yogurt mask with honey, is still my go-to today. I ended up moving to Dubai and going into finance after college because of family pressure. I was trying to love it, but I just didn't. When the recession hit Dubai in the late 2000s, I remember going to the mall to buy lipstick. No matter how broke I ever got, and I was very broke at the time, lipstick always lifted me up. It's so powerful. That's when I decided to move to Los Angeles and study makeup. After I graduated, I started a blog, and eventually my sister Mona, who is such a visionary, said I should do a product. I felt really insecure about starting products, but I'd been hacking together my own lashes by cutting and curling and gluing other ones together. And Mona was like, "Why don't you take these lashes that you keep crafting and manufacture them?" I knew exactly what I wanted, down to the packaging, which I did with a graphic designer from a selfie I took of my own eyes. It was really a struggle in the beginning, and I could barely keep up. A lot of time, when we needed extra product or packaging, I would do makeup artistry jobs so I could afford to buy supplies. The thing that helped me most when I started my own business was my experience as the president and PR director of student associations in college. Because of that, I knew how to create and run an organization and how to really make things happen, even hard things happen. I've had some pinch-me moments since then. There was a line outside of Sephora at the Dubai Mall when we launched our lip liner last year, and everything sold out in one day. It was so surreal and crazy, and of course I was crying. And then we launched the liners in Sephora in the U.S., and they went on to become one of its best-selling products ever. Everyone was shocked because it was a lip liner, something no one believed in. But I knew in my gut that they were going to make a comeback. People didn't realize the potential. Those were moments when I was so grateful to be able to do what I do. Product development is emotional for me. It's really important as a brand that we feel that our products are going to be life-changing for everyone who buys them. We won't ever launch something we don't feel strongly about. People often ask me who I look up to, and truthfully, I friggin' love Steve Jobs because he never compromised. Before, I felt a little bit nervous to be someone who never compromises, but now I'm in a place where I don't want to compromise. So sometimes I'm really annoying and hard to deal with, but I want to make sure that I feel really good about everything we do. And from 17, three habits to make you rich. Stop vague saving. Telling yourself to set aside cash just because isn't going to motivate you enough to make a difference. Instead, set small savings goals like $100 and then reward yourself with a little treat when you hit your mark. 2, put a protein bar in your bag. What? Here's why. You likely spend a chunk of money on eating out with friends. If you're starving when you hit up a restaurant, you'll order everything on the menu by money. So the trick is to snack more, spend less. And 3, use your piggy bank. Yes, that kitty one collecting dust in your room. At the end of every week, throw all the spare change you've accumulated into it. You'll be shocked by how quickly all those random nickels and dimes add up. And that is, those are 3 habits to make you rich from 17 Magazine. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Have a wonderful week.